Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are you PNLP? This is the Premier Non-League Podcast.
Here we are again, guys. It's episode 63 of the Premier Non-League Podcast in association with Tackle This Together. So far this evening, there's only me and Gaz. Chris is joining us a bit later this evening, and James and Pete have viable excuses this week because, as we record at the moment, Worthing are currently away at Chelmsford in a second v third clash, and James is hoping to join us at half time in around about 20 minutes to half an hour as well. The league leaders Yeovil are also in action this evening at Avery, and I'm hoping, Gaz, you've got the scores 25 minutes in. 0-0 at the moment. There we go. So obviously James isn't going to have a lot to talk about when it comes to the game by the looks of things, but there's going to be plenty with Adam Hinchwood moving on, which we'll come to later in the show. Now we'll start this evening with the sides on unbeaten runs that we've championed the last few weeks as well. One win at the weekend in Cray Valley in the Isthmian South East Division. They got beaten 5-4 by Three Bridges at home, having led 4-2 at one stage after three goals in a five-minute spell. So one's down. Hanworthy Recreation are still in with a shout with their 22-game unbeaten run as well. But they didn't play at the weekend. And there's only one team with a 100% record in the entire country at step five, which is Farnham Town in the combined counties, who have won 24 out of 24 league games. And lucky enough this evening, we've managed to get one of the stars of the show for Farnham so far this year. Central midfielder Harry Cooksley joins us this evening. Harry, thank you very much for coming on and joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
You're welcome.
It's a pleasure to have the Surrey Zidane on a podcast.
Gaz did get that in.
I've got it right at the start.
And he has. Harry, 24 league games unbeaten. No one else in the country can get anywhere closer. Hanworthy's the closest. I think they've won 20 out of their 22. How's it come to this? We're sitting in the first week of March and you haven't lost a league game.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, really. I think, yeah, myself included, along with the five or six lads who came in the summer, you know, we expected to have a strong year and challenge for promotion. But yeah, I don't think any of us could have seen it going quite this well. We didn't even think about the record, you know, you're just ticking them off. And then you get to sort of 15, 16 and you're thinking, you're just going into every game thinking that we can, you know, we're going to win basically without sounding big headed. But, you know, we all feel we got enough in the dressing room to win any game. And yeah, we just keep ticking them off now. Obviously, we've broken the record, so just see how far we can go.
Do you think it's sort of something that, you know, being a step five player where you only train twice a week and, you know, quite often you've had to play on the Tuesday as well, so you probably only trained once a week as well. If the pros can't do it training 4 or 5 days a week, how do you guys manage to pull it off?
It's interesting you say that, Trevor, because if we play the Tuesday, we don't train. So we've had a lot of Tuesdays recently. We did a lot of training in pre-season, I think, for obviously a step five part-time side. And then we haven't really trained a lot. That's the truth. I think he just drilled it into us early in pre-season, how we're going to play, and kind of got everyone set up in their roles in the team. And it's just, we haven't really needed to top it up until here, really. We trained Saturday when the game was called off. But if we play a Tuesday night, we don't train on Thursday. We'll only train on a Wednesday if we don't have a game midweek. So
your coaches and that relying on you all to keep your fitness up individually, yeah? going.
Yeah, so yeah, they brought in like a strength and conditioning coach, if you like, in the summer, who was actually with me last year at Step 3. And he's done programs for everyone basically throughout the week, individual programs that everyone follows. So yeah, just on us to keep the fitness levels up and obviously do the right things before and sometimes after games.
It's not an easy division as well. Obviously, you've got the likes of, you know, as we spoke before off air, you've got the likes of Jersey Bulls in there, who we know are a very progressive club. We've got Croydon Athletic, who have got a lot of money as well. Does that kind of give you that little bit of incentive just to push yourselves that one little bit harder because maybe other clubs have got slightly better resources?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, any player will tell you that those are the games that you look forward to. Although we had to grind out a win against bottom of the league the other week, but you know they're the games you want to play in as a player, the bigger games, the teams that are up the top and challenging you. So yeah, it drives us on. But I think we're all sort of in the camp. We're all just focused on what we're doing. We don't really change in terms of systems or the way we play. We haven't changed it for anyone this year. So we'll keep doing what we're doing, I think.
But as well, having won every game so far, is it? Do you sort of feel the pressure, or does the manager and the coaching staff take that pressure off of you that the next game might be the one that you may not win?
I think the boys all seem to think they're kind of media trained now, and they're saying, "Oh no, we're just sort of looking ahead to the next game. We're not looking at records." But no, I know for a fact that we were all looking into that game about a month ago, thinking that we could get a record here. And yeah, like I say, once you get close to it, it's definitely looming over you. And not with those were some of our sort of touchiest performances. You could tell that there was something else on it other than just 3 points. Obviously managed to get over the line, but yeah, there was always one eye on it, I think.
Was there a point sort of target at the start of the season where you sort of aimed? Obviously, you've got the introduction of the playoffs at Step 5 this year, so was the aim sort of at least to finish in that final playoff position, or was there that, no, actually, we can go and do this?
I think it was sort of from the top to the bottom, it was promotion at all costs. As the players, we all, you know, of course you want to win titles, but I think we all were kind of had our eye on the day out at Wembley in the Vars, that obviously didn't materialise. But yeah, it was promotion at all costs. But basically, that was drilled into us by the management, whether that was via the playoffs or winning the league. But yeah, it was, that's what had to happen, basically.
I was just about to come on to the Vars as well. Was there sort of a little bit of a disappointment that maybe, you know, you've seen clubs like Ascot United last year go to Wembley and win as well, and then move up to Step 4 as well. Littlehampton the year before got to Wembley, didn't quite make the win, but made the step up as well. Was there a little kind of, has that been the only disappointment you think you felt so far this season?
I would say so. Yeah, it came at a really bad time, the game, and I know, you know, we'll probably talk about the run that we've been on, but yeah, in terms of when the game actually fell, we had, I think it was myself and two or three other sort of who played every week that weren't available. We had a couple of injuries on the Tuesday night, and we had the game on the Saturday. So it felt, yeah, like I say, a bad time. But you know, I believe, and I think everyone did, that we had enough to come through the game. But yeah, it just didn't work out on the day. It was yeah, they were a good side, Bridgewater. They played some good football, and on the day they definitely deserved the win.
I think what's quite refreshing to see as well is that not only you guys progressing on the pitch as well, but seeing the club progressing offwards with that new stand as well that's been put in down the side. And I think, am I right, that runs the entire length of the touchline?
Yeah, I think they put one in the summer that was sort of halfway up, and now they've just put in the other side. So yeah, all the way down one side now.
And what sort of like your attendance has been like this season? Have they grown as you've gone?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's always sort of buzz at the start of the season where we were getting close to 1,000 through the gate, most home games, especially on a Saturday. I think then the colder weather sort of takes over a little bit. I think it's been great, honestly. Like I say, I was obviously playing a couple of leagues higher last season, and they're bigger crowds than 90% of the games I played at last year. It's you know, they're doing things the right way at Farnham. They're marketing it obviously really well, and yeah, the fans have been great. And listen, they've obviously I always say it to them, they're spoiled now, because we don't pump someone 6-0, they're always a bit pissed off.
A fickle lot of non-league fans, aren't they?
Just quickly, do you think having the exposure of sort of having sides as one of the sponsors and the sidemen getting involved, and I've seen video clips of some sidemen sort of coming to watch games and that sort of thing, do you think that probably helped the club, the exposure the club are getting?
Yeah, definitely. So. Yeah, I think that was, yeah, last year the sidemen came down. They did a video so before I was here, but yeah. That just brings in so many youngsters as well that I think the club will, you know, that they'll hopefully keep coming back throughout the rest of their life. And yeah. I think at the time where Prime was all the craze, they were selling it there as well, which got a few more through the gate.
Of course it would, yeah. Yeah.
It always helps, doesn't it? Your own career itself, though, Harry's taken you in quite a few different directions, hasn't it? Right from when you started at Reading and QPR. I'm imagining that was it a scholarship to America that you managed to get? And how does that sort of thing come about?
It was interesting, really. So I was at Reading from the age of 9 up until 17, 18. And that's all I ever wanted to do was play for Reading. Play for the first team, and I think I developed so late, kind of physically. Really interesting time when I was in the academy. It's like you kind of hit sort of 15, 16, and your Chelsea, West Ham's seem to have like men playing in those teams, and I couldn't compete really. They were bigger, they were stronger, they were quicker than me. So yeah, from there joined Aldershot in League Two, which I probably wasn't ready for, but I think being in a men's team did me a world of good at such a young age. And then onto AFC Wimbledon when Neil Ardley was in charge the year before they went up to League One, and I think that was for me there, coming from kind of Reading being Premier League, Championship, the whole sort of up and down when I was there for the 8-9 years. And then to being in League Two. And I know at the time you think it's like the end of the world, but you know, looking back for me now, League Two is a great league. And if you know any player makes it in League Two is a dream. But for me it was tough. Like I say, quite underdeveloped physically. And you know, it was the football just didn't kind of agree with what I was trying to do. And in a way sort of fell out of love with the game and kind of thought, I need a backup plan, which was obviously America. That was an ex-coach of mine at Reading who was managing out there, and he basically got me out there. But yeah, that's what made me fall back in love with football, going out to America.
How different was the experience out there? Because obviously the Americans call it soccer, as we know, and I think to me it looks as if I follow a lot of the NFL, and it looks as if soccer grows in sort of fits and spurts. It doesn't sort of, hasn't got a natural trajectory yet. How did you find it when you were over there, and how's that then set you up since you obviously came back via Mallorca B, which we'll get onto in a minute as well, to play obviously mostly at non-league level?
I think it was huge, honestly, for my development. I was always sort of a winger, number 10 at Reading, and never had the defensive element of my game drilled into me. It was always, you know, it's probably changed a lot now, but at that time it was sort of attackers attack and defenders defend. So I was basically there was half of my game that I wasn't doing. And I went out there and it was like, you've got to defend. No, that doesn't matter how good you are going forward. You've got to defend. And that was the same for every single player in the team. You go out there, there's no kind of egos or I've done this, I played for them. It's just everyone is here in the now, enjoying the football, pulling in the right direction. And I think, yeah, I credit it massively from going out there to you know where I went on to. And obviously where I am now, I think I started at Limestone, which is like the middle of nowhere in South Carolina. It's like a alligator hunting territory. which was quite the quite a welcome. A lot of them hadn't even heard an English accent before. It was insane. So from there, I did a year or so there, and then moved to a big school in New York, which was a great time and great football. It's like out there. I mean, it's like a professional standard. The facilities you have. I'm not saying the football is at all, but the facilities and the training and nutrition and everything that goes with it is unbelievable. You probably saw some of the, obviously the NFL, but the college football, they call it. It's almost bigger than the NFL, the amount of crowds they get. I think, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world going out to America. And at the time, I really wasn't keen on doing it. Loved every minute of it.
Brilliant. So how did you end up at Mallorca B from America? How?
Yeah, interesting. So I finished there, and you're probably sure you're aware of like the draft system that they have in the NBA, and so they have that in the MLS as well. So it's like a combine a week down in Florida where you play and test how quick you are and how high you can jump and all that. So he did that and was predicted to be picked in the first round of the draft. That didn't happen. I ended up going in the third round. But you get, basically, if you get picked in the draft, I think it's like the top 10 have guaranteed contracts, and then the rest of you go into preseason and try and earn a contract. So I got drafted by Montreal. Wasn't so keen on kind of going out there to Canada. I'm sure it's lovely, but was hoping to stay in New York anyway. And my agent at the time, Remy, who's an American guy, he was best friends with Steve Nash, the NBA.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, from back in the day. And he part owns Real Mallorca, so him and Stuart Holden, the centre midfielder from Bolton. Remember back in the day?
Yes.
So they both own a stake in Real Mallorca. And they basically said, look, go out there and train for a couple of weeks, see how you like it. And I loved it. And they offered me a 2-year contract, and yeah, didn't look back.
So then with 2 years out there, was it then time to come home? You kind of had enough, or was it a bit of a mutual thing between yourself and the club?
Yeah, it was mutual. I only lasted 8 months. It was just the worst time. And I actually got, literally the month after I got there, I had internal bleeding, which was like, couldn't believe it. Apparently it was something that I was born with that has basically grown with me inside my intestine, and then it started leaking blood. Like, couldn't write it. I've no idea how it happened. It took 5 months for the doctors in Mallorca to try and figure out what it was. They couldn't figure it out, and I was like, I couldn't train. I couldn't walk like 5 minutes without getting a headache and needing to sit down. It was brutal, honestly. Flew back to the UK, and they found it within like 3 days. They found out what it was and did the surgery. But I think at the time it was, I hadn't kicked a ball for 5-6 months, and they were kind of like, what's going on? So yeah, that was done there, which was a real shame, because I think, you know, the club and the football out there would have really suited me. And I still say it to this day, there's the best players I've ever played with were out there. I'll never forget, I went first training session doing the rondo, it was like the small sided keeper. I got nutmegged 3 times before I touched the ball in my first session. I was just like, oh, these boys are another level. But yeah, it was brilliant. Obviously, it didn't work out, but a great experience. I learned a bit of Spanish as well.
But since then, non-league's been good to you?
Yeah, loved it. From there, I went to Austria for a couple of years, which was another great experience. And then, yeah, back to Farnborough with Spencer Day, which is always good fun. we had a great group down there the year we went up through the playoffs. Yeah, great group. And then obviously I grew up in Hartley Whitney. So being back there last year with the armband was a real honour. It was a tough year for me, and obviously the team getting relegated. But yeah, I'll never forget that season to captain them. It was a real pleasure.
So coming back to the present day, now if my maths is right, you've got 14 games to play in 7 weeks. Is that right?
That is right, yeah.
which is still a heck of a lot of football. I mean, we were having a little chat, weren't we, just before we came on air about the amount of games being called off and 3G pitches and everything. But tomorrow night, you're at home on the Tuesday, as we record on the Monday, to...
We're away tomorrow to Croydon.
Away to Croydon, which is quite a big game, as we said as well, with the money they've got with their takeover. And Saturday against...
I've got no idea.
One game at a time, Trev. One game at a time. Come
that's,
on.
That's what Mr. Brennan tells me every single week when I listen to him watch a Barnet game. But it is away to Camberley Town. There we go. Two away trips on the spin. Right.
Yeah, I think we've got three in a row, yeah.
Yeah, three in a row. Away. Because they're away to Knapp Hill on the Tuesday after, is that?
Tuesday. Has there been any talk yet of like, right, if we win X amount of games, that's it, the title's in the bag? Or is it, we just keep going, we just keep picking up the 3 points?
There's definitely talk of it. I think if results go our way, I think we've got probably seven. If we win seven, I think we'll be over the line. But, well, I mean, we're fairly thin at the moment in terms of the squad. There's not sort of players like if we get over the line for, you know, early this next month, sorry. I'd quite like to put my feet up for a bit, but I don't think I'll be able to. I think we just haven't got the players. We haven't got the players, and I think they scrapped the under-23s at the end of last year. So we haven't got like another 11 that could play. But yeah, definitely getting closer, Trev. We can nearly taste the vodka in my bath.
still got a little jolly up to the jersey as well, haven't you, to go? I think just looking at that.
Yeah, a couple of weekends. Yeah, that'll be good fun. I think flying on the Friday and then back on the Sunday, so that'll be good fun.
Yeah, as well. I mean, that's a nice experience as well for, you know, to be able to get to Jersey and guys obviously a level above to go to, you know, to Guernsey as well. It's not something every non-league footballer gets a chance to do as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. We played Hollywood and we played Guernsey in pre-season, and it's great. You know, whether it's at the start of the season or in the season, I think it's great to go away with the boys. Obviously have a bit of a night out and just spend a bit more time, because when you come in for a game, it's sort of get in, have a quick chat, and then get ready, play, and then a few drinks after, and then you're off. So I think it just helps, you know, with the team bonding and bringing everyone a bit closer, I think.
Absolutely. Harry, thank you very much for coming on. Good luck for the rest of the season. We'll be, as we've been watching all the way through the year, we've been watching those wins tick up in the column and still a zero in the losing column. So come another 7 weeks' time, we hope it's still a zero in the losing column for you.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks very much, guys, for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. Cheers, thanks, Harry. Superb. There we go. Nice to actually get someone on from Farnham, Gaz. We've been trying, haven't we, for a couple of weeks to try and get a person in. And right on cue, at this very moment, just as we predicted, that couldn't have gone any better. James is joining us from Chelmsford. James, hello. What's the half-time score?
We have got a 0-0 kind of end-to-end game here in Chelmsford. We've both had quite good chances, to be fair. So it's not too bad a game. But yeah, you're not allowed any beer behind the goal, which is a weird rule. But you can have a bit of sides.
How's the old running track?
It looks very pristine, actually. I don't know. But you can have coffee, but you can't have beer on the running track. But it's a weird rule here in Chelmsford. But they do good pies. So, Trev, you'd be happy if the... pies and the food here, they're very nice.
They do very good burgers there, because I was there last year when we played in the FA Cup. I can't remember, they use the same caterers as I think it's Wildstone and Boreham Wood.
Yeah, no, I tell you why I got a pie, because it was £7 for a pie and a pint, so I was like, oh, that's a good deal. But then I couldn't drink my beer next to the goal, so I kind of regretted getting that, so I should have just got a soft drink. But there
we
go.
Do you get a free pair of binoculars so you can see the picture?
Well, I had to have a free pair of binoculars when I was drinking my beer, mate, because, yeah, I was miles away, but then I kind of wolfed it down and then necked it and then sort of... There we go. But, yeah, no, we already Ollie Pearce on a yellow card, one of their players on a yellow card. It's quite a feisty match. We had both teams had a couple of chances to make it one up, but no, it's 0-0 at half-time, so should be an exciting second half.
It's 0-0 in Averley Yeovil as well, just to give you
a... Yeah, no, it's interesting. Yeah, no, so it's all to play for at the top end. They got the documentary crew filming here for the Worthing documentary that's coming out later in the year. So they obviously were due to go on Saturday, before the game got called off at Dartford. So they're quite happy to be here, which is good. And it's weird hearing Aaron chants as a gaffer. That's really, really strange. It still doesn't feel, it feels weird. Like, because obviously this is the first game we've seen as Aaron and Buddy and Dino is behind the dugout. So yeah, interesting. But hopefully we can get something out of it. But yeah.
Brilliant.
How's the recording going? Are you missing me?
No.
Like a hole in the head?
Yes, we are.
Is it just you two having a chat without Chris, basically?
No, we just had a nice chat with Harry. Harry's been on.
How was Harry?
Actually, James, you couldn't have timed it any better, because we literally just finished with Harry and you jumped into the waiting room. So we best talk Adam Hinchwood.
Adam Hinchwood. Who's he? Who's that guy? I forgot his name. Who's that?
And, well, actually, while you're on, we'll put an apology out here, because we managed to jinx Tamworth and who else did we jinx?
Worthing.
And Worthing 2 weeks ago when we...
Didn't you jinx Barnet as well? Or did Barnet win?
No, I never jinxed my own team. And and then we also managed to put the kiss of death on Adam Hinchelwood as well.
Well, yeah, you super jinxed Worthing. It wasn't just a result, you actually jinxed him with management as well. It wasn't a little jinx. It was like kind of, yeah, thanks guys. Thanks for super, like literally. These things happen when you leave me when I'm not on the podcast, isn't it? You know, I can't leave you guys to take the ship and sail it in a safe way. You have to take it through choppy waters, don't you?
So yeah. let's talk Adam Hinchelwood, James, because the last time I think you left Woodside Road, Adam Hinchelwood was in the Worthing dugout, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was that disappointing result against Braintree, which on Saturday week ago, which, you know, to be fair, it was Braintree set up a game plan, scrappy goal we conceded, it was a defensive mistake, and then they sat back and defended and played the game very well. Don't think they made much of an effort to increase that scoreline. And to be fair, we were kind of frustrated because we didn't think there was much bottle in the team, and we just walked out at the full-time whistle not thinking we'd never see Adam Hinchelwood again in the dugout. So it was a real surprise, because if you've listened to the Rebel Yell podcast, which is obviously the podcast me and Pete and Spencer and Jacko do, I know you have, Trev, but yep. You know, as you said, we spoke to Barry, the chairman, Barry Hunter, and he said he got a call while he was having dinner with his wife on Saturday night. So that's when the whole process started, and it's quite unusual for a sort of manager to have lost the game to be approached by another club.
Yeah, definitely a little bit. I mean, we've said, though, haven't we, for quite a few months and possibly a couple of years, that Adam's stock has risen really well in the game. And as Barry alluded to in the interview as well on Rebel Yell, that they had approaches for Adam in the past and they were prepared that at some point it was going to happen, he was going to go. But, I mean, having obviously listened to the Rebel Yell podcast as well and watch what Worthing fans have said on social media as well during the week, a lot of people thought it was maybe a strange time for him to be going.
100%. I mean, the thing is that, as you know, on our WhatsApp group, Gaz has kind of wound me and Pete up a few times over the last few weeks when jobs have come available, Eastleigh being one of them. Now, you look back at it and you think, he must have been linked with Eastleigh. And you think, I know they're a bit of a head case at the moment with like changing managers left, right and centre, but you would have thought, for his own profile and like his family life, obviously everyone being down south, he's never played further than Wickham as a professional, you know, further north, you'd have thought maybe he would have taken something like that. But it's just the sort of states of York. Like, you look now, Dorking with that fantastic win at the weekend over Chesterfield, who obviously at the moment runaway leaders, and I can't see that changing anytime soon, to then put York in the relegation zone, them losing 3-2 on Saturday, and you think he's given himself a massive job. And fans being fickle as they are, we all know fans can be fickle, but he's like got people against him already, and I think York fans need to give him a chance. But it's a project, and I think from what I understand is, even if they go down, obviously you can't confirm, I think he'll probably end up being in the job next season. But it seems a strange one, because Worthing obviously in not pole position, but in a very good chance of being promoted, or at least doing very well in the playoffs.
I think, and I said it in the group as well, I think staying in the south wasn't the right decision. And I think, Trev, you alluded to the fact that the National League is very northern heavy. League Two is very northern heavy. Yes. So actually, he's gone there. In my head, out of respect to not staying in the South League and having to come up against Worthing regularly, because he respects the team and the management team and the owner, George, and that sort of thing. But also to show off a little bit to the teams in the North, hey, look, I'm Adam Hinchelwood and this is what I do.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope he doesn't come and raid our players over the summer. But as Barry alluded to, they've got a League One budget, so I can't see that happening too much, to be honest.
It depends very much what division York are going to be in as well. I think I agree with what Gaz has said as well. It gives him an opportunity in a different part of the country, and you know he's done it down here. If he goes along the coast, even if he's gone one division higher, then he's not really testing himself, and he's stepped out well outside his comfort zone. He put himself in a place where he knows it could go wrong. He's had interviews already. These jobs don't come around all the time.
But what do you guys think? Like, honestly, like, I know we've obviously talked offline on our thing. I'm not sure if you touched on it yet on the pod, but what do you guys think about his move to York? Like, do you think are you surprised at the club forgetting like where they are, but you know, other jobs that have come available and obviously his family position?
No,
I'm not overly surprised. No.
With the way they are in the league as well.
Yeah,
chance you take though. I mean, I did a piece today earlier for one of the sites I write for, and which was on the relegation battle itself. And the bottom seven clubs have all changed managers apart from Dorking and Maidenhead. Neither of those two clubs would you see changing manager before the summer. When you look at the others, Kidderminster changed, went for Phil Brown, reeled off four wins in a row. Danny Sells gone in at Ebbsfleet. They've reeled off six games unbeaten. Fylde won five in a row until they dropped a couple the other week. Everyone's basically gone for this new manager bounce because that division is so tight. I mean, I when I was looking at it this afternoon, Hartlepool are up in 12, 47 points. I've said they can still get dragged into that. 50 is normally the benchmark and you'll stay up. I've said to a lot of people, at least 52. And they've gone, what, really? And I'm like, look at how many games are left to play. The minimum is 9 games. You win four of those, even say Kidderminster in the bottom, win four of those games, they're on 50 points. And there's still another five to play. You know, 50 isn't going to be enough this year. So I think they've taken the chance that they play enough teams around them, they think, to pick up enough points. And also, if it doesn't go the way they go, they have got a manager that understands regional football. And... they would hope put them in a better position than Scunthorpe have found themselves in this year. Again, you know, you come up against the likes of a Tamworth, it makes it slightly different. But, you know, it is what it is. You can't hang on, you can't wait. It's these opportunities don't come round all the time. So then hopefully they don't end up where Scunthorpe are and don't come up against the Tamworth.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I think that he has got a good, like, obviously, region. I think that's one reason they look for him, because as I sort of said that, like, they scouted him. They knew they wanted him. He's good at regional level football. Obviously, wants to progress his career. The only thing that concerns us is regional level football knowledge is down south. Now, he's got a playbook and a sort of player book down south. Will he be able to replicate that up north? I'm sure he's got some contacts, but has he got as many as he's got down south?
Well, you could say swap Adam Hinchwood for Adam Murray at Eastbourne. Yeah. All his contacts are filed in the north, and I know a lot of players are coming down from filed. But if you pay the wages, if he asks two or three Worthing players to move up, they're going to be full time. They're going to pay good wages. I mean, I know for a fact they throw money at things, and as we said, they've got a League One budget. It hasn't worked for the managers they've had so far, but that's such an enticing tool that he's got in his back pocket. Pretty much for anyone he wants, he can persuade to go that far.
And I'm sure he's going to have people there who work for York City, can advise on players, he can go and watch players. They'll have some sort of scouting network at a club like York City, even if they drop down a level, to be able to pick up players in that area. So,
to be honest, I think the thing I thought was interesting about it was that he did say in his interview he's quite looking forward to just concentrating on the first team. So although he knew what he was getting into, a job at Worthing, he was obviously in charge of the academy and everything like that. And I think, you know, to really progress your career as a manager, you want to be focused on the men's first team. You don't really want to be, you obviously take an interest in youth, because obviously that's what could end up like bringing through players. But I mean, we've got to look ahead to the fact that who could replace him. Now, obviously, we've got Aaron Racine, who's the club captain, retired club captain legend. Darren Budd, who's very well respected at Worthing, you know, local Sussex guy. He's stepped away from Burgess Hill. And then you've got Dean Hammond, who apparently, from what people said, is actually a fantastic coach. Now, the sort of the problem we've said is what happens if they do the inevitable, well, not the inevitable, the unthinkable, and get Worthing promoted through the playoffs, or even better, you know, do you offer them the job? Because I think you've kind of got to.
I think very interesting, because obviously listen to Barry's interview on Rebel Yell as well. You know, I wasn't wholly convinced by Barry that the three of them would stay in charge the entire, well, however many games was to go, 10 games or so. You know, to be honest, it's an attractive job because of what Hinch has done there in the last 6 years, that people will want it. A lot of people look at Worthing off the pitch as well as on it, as to how the club's progressed there as well. That becomes attractive to someone as well, that knows that they've got stability off the pitch, that they can concentrate on what's going on the pitch. I don't think there'd be any shortage of applicants for it, to be honest.
No, well, he said he's already had people apply for it. And, you know, to be honest, it's a bit like what Hinch said in our off-season podcast. He says he used to have to chase players and convince them to come to Worthing. Now they come to him. And he's got inundated, and that's the way that happens, the way the football club's going. I mean, look, we're sitting right now, we're playing second place Chelmsford as we speak. We're third. You know, we've got a game in hand, and, you know, we're in the semi-finals of the eliminators of the season. Semi-finals of the playoffs of the season was to finish now. You've got to think, you know, it is an attractive job. But what I'm thinking, you know, someone like Dean Hammond, who's obviously come away from football, he's doing coaching, he's got to give him a job. Maybe Aaron wouldn't want to take it, but if he got them up, it'd be interesting. But what I understand from Barry is that they're going to start a sort of recruiting process in a week or two, start getting sort of what they want and to discuss. And there's no rush. But yeah, I think the three interim coaches, heads slash manager, know that it could be taken away from any instance.
Yeah, I think having put those three in charge was the most sensible thing to do. You've got people that connect with the club, connect with the fan base, and it should be fairly smooth moving forward. But you know, there is no given that they'll keep it till the end. There's no given.
No,
that
not at all.
Even no. Keep it. There's no guarantee they'll want it if they go up. So
exactly.
But that attractiveness of the club that's been built means that, you know, people will want it, no question of a doubt.
It's a high profile job now for the level that it's at. It's a high profile job.
100%. It's a huge job. It's an absolutely huge job, and you know it's got the potential to reap its rewards later on in the season / next season, possibly in the future. But also, it could go very wrong very quickly if the right appointment isn't made.
It can always go wrong very quickly anywhere.
Yes, that's it, and we've seen that. but yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting few weeks. It's like, you know, funny that, like, you know, two of our clubs at the moment without managers, without players and everything like that. It's you know, Christian South Shields takeover bid, not got a permanent manager. I think it's going to be a couple of weeks. I think they need a bit of stability, and I think Barnet are the ones that give us that at the moment, aren't they?
I was going to say, I feel quite stable at the moment. Yeah,
you can just sit there and with a smug look on your face and go, thank God nothing's happening to my club. Just like that, we just got a new home to contend with.
Well, exactly, yeah,
impossible promotion, that. But yeah, just as the rain's pouring, the second half starting, I'm going to love you and leave you guys, and hopefully be with you in a couple of weeks' time properly in a nice warm room where the rain isn't falling.
Brilliant stuff. Good luck for the second half.
Cheers. Enjoy the recording, guys. See you later, guys. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bye. Well, we were hoping Chris would be on by now, but looks like he's still running.
Not likely, is it?
No, he's running a little bit late, but we'll go Barnet before we go
let's
to...
Go Barnet.
Let's go Barnet before we go to Chris. And what have we done since we recorded last? We've beaten York and got Neil Ardley the sack. We lost to Chesterfield. What else did we do? We must have beaten somebody else. Might have been filed. I can't remember.
Chesterfield, York, Hartlepool. You beat Hartlepool.
Oh, we beat Hartlepool at the weekend, we did, yeah, which is a very good result. Kevin Phillips' first defeat at home under his tutelage. So that was a very decent result. And we lost to Aldershot on
lost
the Tuesday night
Aldershot.
After we recorded, which was a funny game. We were very flat. We had a good chance to win it. Just before they did, their goal came from a double deflection. But good side. I like Aldershot. I like the job that Tommy and Hugo have done there this year, and I expect them to finish in the playoffs. I told Hugo as much, but he won't quite believe it yet. Where did we go then? After there,
Aldershot game you were at, weren't you?
Reading my own program notes. Yeah.
That's a surreal experience, or is it something you become used to now?
No, yeah. I've read them at I've read my own at Cray Valley early this year as well. I've yet to get to Corinthian, which I should be actually in a couple of weeks before we record again. Just after we record again. No, what was more nice was in Victoria Rogers' column, who puts the program together, putting a nice little welcome in there, which I read my column while I was at the game, didn't get a chance to read the rest of the program till I got home. So it wasn't actually till I was sitting down just after I got in and made a cuppa and sat down. I was like, oh, that's there as well. So yeah. that was quite nice as well. But they've actually had a couple of quite nice complimentary emails from visiting clubs in the last few weeks about the quality of their programme. I knew before I started writing for it this year, it was one of the better ones around. So it's nice to be involved in that. So yeah, we lost to Aldershot.
Give your programme writing business a little shout out before you move on, or?
Well, I can do, yeah. It's a bit late in the season, but
for next season though. People start planning early, don't they?
Yeah, for next season, I write currently for five different clubs. Aldershot at the top, Met Police in the middle, then Glebe and Corinthian at step five, and Cray Valley at step four. Met Police I've been at for 3 years. Glebe, this is their second year. Cray Valley and Aldershot, it's their first year, and I've also done a bit for Selby Town this year and Eversley in California last year as well. But basically each club gets their own column. It's completely unique. No one gets the same article. So this coming weekend, when you listen to this on a Friday, I've got one in Aldershot, one in Corinthian and one in Glebe. So they've all got completely different columns. You could go to all three games or get all three programs. I find three completely different topics on it as it goes, which is how unique it is. So I've always got room for more. So next season, if you want to find out some more, drop me a message on Twitter at TrevK37. I'll run you through exactly what it is and whatnot. And you know, if you want to speak to any of those clubs, get some screenshots, some pictures, some ideas of how good it is, please feel free to.
It's great when they leave us to our own devices, isn't it? We can do what we want.
It's beautiful. So anyway, after all the shot away, we then beat York at home 2-0 and got Neil Ardley the sack 2 days afterwards for that Adam Hinchwood move. Hosted Chesterfield on the Tuesday night, missing 8 first-team players. I'll be honest, I don't think Chesterfield were very good. Two defensive mistakes for me cost us both goals of players. One of our players not tracking a winger ball into the box and they scored. Second one, we were messing around with the ball a little bit and again, defensive mistake and 2-0. Credit them, wasn't a great performance. Results are what count this time of the year rather than performance. But I just thought a lot of their general play was just shoddy. To be fair, Ashley Grimes, who I think's been a fantastic centre half this season, the amount of balls he put into nowhere on that Tuesday night was horrendous. I actually thought I was watching his worst twin brother, I think.
Yeah.
But I think if we'd have had, you know, we weren't clinical enough in the final third. If we'd have had two or three of those players back, which we did on Saturday at Hartlepool, I think we'd have given them a better game. Was I surprised Dorking beat them 4-1 at the weekend? No. I was surprised Dorking turned up and scored four, considering I watched them the Saturday before and they conceded four and been played off the park by Ebbsfleet.
They looked really good, actually, Dorking.
They did, yeah. Chesterfield, again, looked really ragged, really sluggish.
I think Paul Cook would be the first person to admit that as well. If you listen to his post-match interview, he says, he makes a little joke and said, yeah, he thought we were really good and that. But, yeah, they were poor, I think, all over
absolutely.
The patch.
Yeah, I mean, I've said to a few people that last year Wrexham and County pushed each other, so they had to keep going. Chesterfield have had no one pushing them. So at some point, which I think is natural, the foot comes off the gas a little bit.
Yeah.
And I mean, their win against us is their only win in the last five, I think.
Yeah.
Of course, they're still going to win the league. They'd have to have a monumental collapse for Barnet or Bromley to, jump in. But
tight though, isn't it, between Barnet and Bromley?
Very between us two, yeah.
Yeah, we very, both played Tuesday very night. Even.
Both played Tuesday night. But at the end of the day, I've said for a few months, Barnet Bromley will finish second and third, literally because the sides underneath are not consistent enough. If you go back and look at the weekend results in the National League, Bromley and Barnet both picked up wins. Chesterfield, obviously, as we said, they lost.
Yeah.
Then you start looking down the table and Gateshead only picked up a point. Halifax didn't win. Altrincham lost. Solihull only drew. Oldham only drew.
Yeah.
Aldershot were the only winners, I think, in that top bracket of the playoffs from 4th to 10th, which is why I can't see any of them overtaking us, because they've got to put a run together and they're all incapable of doing it.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but that's just how I've seen it for a few months. So I haven't seen enough to change my mind either. So
no,
that'll be the top two.
As soon as we have no Chris, talking about Bromley and Barnet probably segues right into something else, doesn't it?
South Shields? Go on. Or the FA Trophy?
FA Trophy?
Well, we'll quickly do a little touch on South Shields.
Go on then. I thought we'd leave Chris to talk about that. But
well, we would, but as he's not arrived, we'll do a little bit for him. So they've played three times since we last since they last recorded. They had a Tuesday off last week and they didn't play on the Saturday prior because of Banbury's waterlogged pitch, which actually drained very well in recovery, which is good for them. But a little bit hit and miss again for South Shields. A win three, four games ago and a loss at the weekend, which is a little bit of a damaging one to Kings Lynn. But they're not out of the playoff race yet, are they?
No, absolutely not. It's very tight at the top of that National League North, though, isn't it? The same as it's tight at the bottom of the National League North.
Yeah.
It's quite a tight little league, isn't it? So
yeah, it has been. I think when you look at now the North and the South, you're starting to get that little bit of a divide. If you look at, I think South Shields are holding that 4-point gap over Spennymoor, although they've got a game in hand. And when you look at the South, you've got Slough and 10th have got that 6-point gap over Tunbridge Angels and a game in hand on the Angels as well. There's becoming that bit of divide between clubs, but like you say, once you get either side of that gap as well, it is really bunchy. Once again, which I think is great because it shows it's competitive. If you look at all three divisions, the leaders are well away.
Yeah.
And the competition is underneath them.
Yeah. I mean, you sort of take Stortford out of that, don't you? Like, but you look from Dover. but you look from sort of, there's 8 points between 18th and 23rd in the National League North.
Mm.
And the south table won't load up on my phone, so I can't tell you the difference in them. But yeah, it's close in all of them, isn't it? So,
well, while we're on subject of relegation,
yeah,
on the piece I did earlier today for the National League, I did pick the four that were going down.
Plumpton, in the National League?
Yeah. But we'll do the north and the south as well, because there's a couple that you think have gone in both cases, but two's going to put the other places. So in the National League, I went Oxford City and Woking. And then I went Maidenhead and Fylde, I think.
Okay.
What would be your four?
I mean, looking at that, it's... You've picked some, like, Maidenhead who are in 19th and Fylde in 17th. So,
when you look at the form guide,
yeah,
that's why I picked the pair of them.
Okay. Oxford City, I think that's a dead cert.
Yeah.
I think they look like they were lucky to go up, I think, last season.
Mm. So
I think they just looked strong in the playoffs. Yeah, Woking, I think you're right. Kidderminster, I'm going to go with. And then.
Okay.
York.
Fair enough.
I think it might be a little bit too late for Hinch going up there. Watching them after the second goal went in on Saturday, they looked a little bit sort of heads down.
Just
from watching highlights and that sort of thing.
I think the fact he'd only had the 4 days training though, I know they've got another game on the Tuesday night, which I think they host filed tomorrow evening as we record on the Monday.
Okay.
I just looking at the form of the others, Maidenhead, I think, have got like one win in their last four or five, I think it is. Dorking, you can just never discount.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there was just something. I think because Dorking and Wealdstone have got games in hand more than anyone else.
Yeah.
They've got that extra little bit of cushion, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, most of Wealdstone's games are at home. They've only lost three home games as it is so far. You'd expect them to get out. But I think it was Fylde's form was a little bit iffy as well. So that's the only result for them. And Kiddy looked like they'd lost their way a little bit after their four straight wins. But they come back with two wins on the bounce again. So I just fancy that extra bit's going to get them out again. So,
yeah.
Thing is, there's 9 games minimum for those sides to play. There's like so much that can still happen. It's crazy, but right, let's have a look at the north then.
Go on then.
Right, we think Bishops and Gloucester, I think, are done.
Yeah.
Darlington have won 6 out of 12. Oh, here's Mr. May. Darlington
just out of his meeting.
Just out of his meeting. Darlington have won 6 out of 12.
Yeah.
That's massive. And they beat Banbury at the weekend, who've dropped into that bottom four. That's pulled them back into it. And, you know, beyond that, what's, you know, the points tally of 50, I think, might just be enough to keep them up there. Any club that gets to that point.
I think Kings Lynn will be there or thereabouts.
Interesting. And just as we're on the National League North, Mr. May joins us. Yeah. It looks like the car park of God knows where.
How are you? I'm very well, thanks. Are you guys okay?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah. We're actually just talking through the clubs at the moment, and we've done a little bit on Shields, but now we can get it from the horse's mouth instead. How have the last 2 weeks been?
Almost non-existent, because you go from the huge high of beating Scunthorpe on a pretty magical night. It was terrific. I just wish I was would have been a school night, you know, I wasn't drinking. It would have been nice to have been able to be a few pints in and then, you know, celebrate properly. But to go from that to then having a postponement, Banbury United was literally underwater, so that had to be postponed. We were travelling down, so we were gutted that we couldn't have our weekend down there.
What did you do instead? Then,
what did I do? I just sat in the house and drank.
Drowned your sorrows.
Yeah, just because the wives were away.
Yeah.
All the wives were away. So me and my two lads, I think we watched some sport, football, all sorts of sport in the afternoon, and I just drank. And then Saturday away, King's Lynn, you know, probably, we weren't there, of course. It looks like we weren't quite at the races. Should have scored early on, and had we done so, it would have been different. But I haven't even watched the highlights. But it's kind of just it just epitomizes the season. You know, have these excellent victories, and then somehow you lose. We've lost to Darlington from the relegation zone. We've lost to King's Lynn. So it's just one of those things. But the victory against Scunthorpe was a terrific victory. Scunthorpe schooled us in the first 20 minutes and should really have been 2 or 3 goals up. But we defended brilliantly. The keeper made some good saves. They were a bit wasteful. Then we grew into the game and we caused them all sorts of problems at the back. Their back, their central defensive partnership, to me, looked a little bit shaky. I'm not going to say they were poor, but there's a few chinks in the armour there. And I think that's the difference between them and Tamworth. Tamworth have a better defence and can keep more clean sheets than Scunthorpe. Scunthorpe were excellent, as I say, but we were terrific on the night. So I was just listening to Gaz there about King's Lynn being there or thereabouts. They'll probably stay up. Probably going to have to eat a slice of humble pie. Happily, very happily, because it looks like Darlington looked like we might be getting themselves out of trouble.
We're just saying that.
Yeah, they've hit some form. And so I've got a feeling Southport might get dragged back into it. So it's clearly Bishop Stortford are going down, Gloucester. But it's
Banbury.
Banbury, yeah. I mean, Banbury they've had 6 home games postponed now. And they've only got 2 spare Tuesdays between now and the end of the season. So they're going to be, they could be easily sucked right into that, having to play catch up. And when you're in that kind of position, you're catching up and they're in danger. But it's going to be a terrific end of the season. A terrific end.
Brilliant. While on the subject of Scunthorpe as well, we've got to mention the crowd at the weekend. 7,511 is tremendous, isn't it?
It's just mental, isn't it? A real shot in the arm, though, for non-league football. It shows that, in a way, they've got a pretty loyal fan base. You know, yes, they've gone down the divisions, but the fans are sticking with them through thick and thin. You know, 7,000 is bigger than some of the crowds they got when they were still in the Football League. That's a real shot in the arm, and it's great to see. We need clubs to survive. We need clubs to stay alive, and that type of support goes a long way to making sure that they do. It's wonderful for the non-league game.
Absolutely. You mentioned Banbury got about 6 home games called off, but they're no Truro or Taunton, who have only played 31 games in the National League South. And having their game between the pair of them move to Gloucester at the weekend, how the hell are they going to fit in 15 games each on the same pitch by the end of April?
On a very wet pitch.
Yeah.
That's only going to get worse. And which is, I mean, you might have touched this earlier, the FA's decision to not allow leagues to be extended is just, I was just incredulous when I read that. But it just smacks of what the FA are about. And it really does magnify the problem, because you've got clubs who don't have the money to either get good drainage or a 3 or 4G pitch. It's just going to magnify year on year on year, unless some money can be dripped down from the top. If it doesn't, you're going to have clubs going out of business, because clubs who can't hold or host football matches are not going to make any money on ancillary sales. I mean, we've spoken in the last podcast about Jarrow, you know, hadn't played a home game since October. Mm. How are clubs going to survive without income? So it's not just about having a game called off. It's about the actual future of the whole club.
Yeah.
Having to play their games. There was a Northern League game played at, I think it was Ford Hub in Sunderland. They're not going to make any money by hosting the game at Ford Hub. It's just impossible. So clubs are literally going to, they're going to go at the wall. And I'm going to say this now, this might come back and bite me, but the FA in some ways will have blood on their hands. And by not helping, all they've asked for is a 2 to 3 week extension just so they can get games played sensibly, get some income. And by saying no, well, what happens if these teams literally cannot get the games played? What's going to happen? Yeah, are they going to be thrown out of? Are they going to be thrown out of leagues? Are they going to be docked points for failure to fulfil fixtures? It's just, it's going to end in tears.
You'll see clubs playing Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday just to be able to get games in, aren't you?
Yeah.
Then you're going to get injuries. Then you're going to have teams not able to fulfil fixtures because they haven't got squads.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It shows a lack of clarity, a lack of thought for clubs at grassroots level again. And we're like broken records on this podcast because somewhere along this, you know, throughout the season, we've got two or three different reasons why we say what we say about the non-league game being just, we're just also rans, you know.
Just before you come on, Chris, we were having a look at the relegation zones in each of the three National League divisions. So I've done a piece for one of the other sites on the National League. So we've done the top division in the north. We just had the south to go. So bearing in mind Taunton with their 25 games in hand and have now dropped into the bottom four. Looking at that, you'd say Haverton and Waterloo Villa and Dover are gone literally because they've played too many games.
Yeah.
Welling have done themselves a favour. They haven't lost under Rod Stringer and Kevin Watson at the moment. And a good point against Braintree at the weekend, have actually pulled themselves out and dragged Dartford into the mix. And the only gap you've got there is between Truro and Western Supermare. And the gap's 4 points, but only one game difference as well. So which four are going down?
I'll tell you who I think.
Go on.
Dover, Havant, Taunton and Truro. Now, there's reason behind my madness. Obviously, Taunton and Truro got a lot of games to play.
Yeah,
there's going to be a point where they might be playing Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday to get those games in.
Yeah.
I watched Eastbourne a couple of weeks ago, and they are playing. They do play some really good football, and I think I think that it will click, regardless of whether I work with them. I do think that it will click and they will pick up. I think they'll pick up another 9 to 12 points.
Yeah,
I need more than that, but okay.
I don't think Truro and Taunton will, purely based on the fact that they're going to have to play so many games.
And what if they can't actually physically get the games played? They physically can't because the pitch is already saturated. You know, Gloucester are going to be hosting 7 games a week by the looks of it.
Yeah,
it's lucky Gloucester have played 36 games, Chris. They haven't got any midweek fixtures, probably.
I was going to say, for some of those Truro players who potentially are based Cornwall, Plymouth, that sort of area, that is a long journey, as well as playing 90 minutes plus 8 minutes additional time, which you seem to get in most games now. Plus the 200 miles drive back down south, that will start to take its toll. I mean, I can't talk. It'll take its toll if I went and played 2 minutes down the road. But these guys potentially work a full time job. They play football part time, travel 200 miles to go and do their football. I think for both of those teams, it will be too much.
I would agree with Gaz, but also caveat that by they may not ultimately be able to fulfil all of the fixtures. They might not, because if we do get more rain, which is likely, their pitch would not be able to withstand it. Yes, they could go to Gloucester, but then they're no longer kind of playing at home. They're playing away. They're losing all kinds of the advantages of playing at home. And they're playing on a true surface where they might need, you know, I don't know what style of play they have, but they come up against opposition who like to get the ball down and on a good surface will be able to play the football that ordinarily they wouldn't have been able to play on grass. That's foot on mud, you know.
Have you seen the video of the pitch at Taunton?
I haven't. I've seen Banbury for obvious reasons, but I haven't seen Taunton.
Yeah.
I've seen Bradford.
Bradford. Yeah. Well, Bradford's horrendous. Banbury was literally underwater. You saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the water table is so high, there's no way for the water to go. We only need a couple of hours rain and it's just back up again. So you're going to have to just hope that we get some unseasonably dry weather.
It's going to be a fun seven weeks, isn't it?
Absolutely. Very much so. And it might, as I say, you know, it could end badly, very badly for a lot of clubs, not just those, but other clubs all over the country who may not be able to fulfil fixtures.
Absolutely. Got a lot to play, some of them. Now, Gaz was hoping to link in nicely with the FA Trophy earlier with Bromley and Barnet in second and third in the National League, and I shot him down in flames. But I'll give him his moment. I'll give him his moment of glory now with eight sides left in the trophy and the vase this weekend. I know we've mentioned it quite a bit the last few weeks with the draws. And whatnot. Who's winning both?
What? Who's winning the vase and who's winning the trophy?
That was my question. Who's winning both? Not literally, you can't win the both competitions because you're in separate, but you know what I mean.
Back in the north. I am going to say that the winner of the trophy will come from the game that's being played at Hayes Lane on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I'll go with the same as well.
I think it'll be Bromley or Barnet to win the trophy.
Yeah.
Gateshead.
I agree. Nah, Gash is going to come up with another winner at Gateshead on the weekend to stop the Rapid Feather in the semi-final. That's going to be my guess on that one. And the Vars?
I am going to go with... And I've never seen any of these teams play. I don't really... I know some of them. I am going to go for Romford.
Okay.
Chris, is Emily in that list, Trev?
Yep, Emily are in, yeah. Emily
are my pick.
I'm going to go with the favourites, Deal Town, who have already won the Vars in 2000.
Okay.
Sticking to your home county, yeah.
Indeed, yeah. To be fair, I fancy a little bit of North Greenford United because I think they're fourth in the combined counties at the moment. And they're a little bit down the road from Barnet. Fancy a bit of them, but you've got Worcester who are doing very well in their division. Falmouth knocked out Jersey Bulls in the last round. So, there's a few winners in there. I'm sticking with Deal, although they've got something like 15 league games still to play and another one if they progress in the Vars as well before the end of April. Could be a Vars and promotion double, but
yeah.
We'll sort of see how it goes this weekend, won't we? Right. Time we've wrapped up. Any shout outs? Anyone?
Yeah, I've got one. It just came up on my Twitter/X.
Exclusive?
No, it's a sad one, really. Just shout out to the family of Kenny Hindle, who was a lifelong Bury fan. Watched the club for over 70 years. Unfortunately, she passed away today. So I just wanted to give him and the club a little shout out for his family.
Chris?
No. I want to give a shout out to all the football clubs up and down the country who are getting shit on by the FA. because it's just ludicrous, you know. It's unprecedented. We've had unprecedented rainfall and they cannot just, on this one occasion, just move goalposts slightly. So a big shout out to all those clubs, which include players, supporters, backroom staff, volunteers who are currently having to deal with unprecedented problems. My heart goes out to them all.
And all those groundsmen who are trying to get these flipping grounds ready during the week. I only got to rain on Thursday and Friday and then happen to try and fall pitch on Saturday morning and find a losing battle. So
yeah.
Fair play to all of you. Have you got another one, Gaz?
Yeah, I might have.
Oh,
Jack Harding.
Oh, that's one of mine, but go on, yeah, go on.
That's it. Banbury United, equaling Banbury United's all-time club record for most appearances at 356, which is a massive achievement.
By the time you listen to this, he may well have played his 357.
Yes, if he plays against Russell Olympic on Tuesday night.
I think he's more away.
Yeah.
I think more than anything. And the other one I've got, Congleton FC at step 5, 1,002 through the gate at the weekend is
fantastic.
Tremendous Great. For that level of football. Really, nice. Really, really good. Really, really good. Right, where are we all off to next 2 weeks? Gaz?
I don't know. I told you, I plan it literally 2 days in advance. Haven't even had a look, to be honest.
I'm going
to
buy you a diary for Christmas.
Got one.
That's a file of facts.
No, it's not. It's a diary.
It's a file of facts.
I don't plan it because I never really know what I'm doing. But I'm sure there'll be some sort of football somewhere. I will have a look. I tell you what, I'll even have a look and I might even put it out there as to where I'm going before this when this pod comes out on Friday.
Blimey. Stop the press. Chris?
Yes.
Yeah, Shields have got two home games, Saturday and Tuesday. So it's one of those where really you're looking for 6 points at this stage if you want to have any idea of getting towards the playoffs. So two big home games coming up. So yeah, that's where I'll be.
Superb. I'm off to Barnet tomorrow night for another rearranged game against Rochdale. And then I'll be watching Barnet again at the weekend in the FA Trophy at Bromley. And where am I going next week? Next Tuesday? I don't know, actually. I'm not sure. I could be. I'll be somewhere.
But I'm going to buy you a diary for Christmas.
Oh, yes. No, I do remember where I'm. I do remember I'm going. And do you know why? Because I've got two games in the diary. The first one's... First one's either Barnet against Eastleigh, or the second one is the Sussex Senior Cup semi-final between Littlehampton and Hastings at Lancing.
Oh,
that's
yeah, that
where
be.
I'll be. See, I knew. You didn't. I don't need a diary.
No, but I have a very busy social life.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
I do. I'm going out for dinner on Tuesday night this week. I'm not going to football.
That's not football related. It doesn't belong on this podcast.
come on, boys. Play nice ways. Come on.
We have been. James hasn't been here. Yeah. apart from the 15 minutes at half time this evening.
Oh, should we have a little score update?
Let's have a quick look at the scores before we go.
Oh, wow.
Go on.
Barnstormers, 0-0 in both games.
Oh. No.
National League South doing it for non-league today, aren't they?
Fantastic.
Monday night blues.
Monday night football. It's like watching Burnley and Blackburn, isn't it?
I haven't seen a 0-0 in nearly two seasons.
You're boring.
Ooh. Commentator's curse there.
I'll tell you what, Gaz. I know this respect to any Woking fans that are listening. Go and watch Woking because they're scoring on average one point something like 0.000 per game.
Again, no offence to Woking fans, but I got absolutely drenched the last time I went there. So I don't plan on going back anytime soon.
That's not very nice. Anyway,
no, just from from the lack of goals and the chance, the opportunity of the rain coming down and getting absolutely drenched, it's gonna stop me for now. Maybe in the summer.
Okay, I promise not to invite you when we play there in the next 6 weeks.
All right, thanks. I might be in trouble if I do go.
yeah, don't go in the home end.
Yeah.
And on that note, we'll wrap it up. So thanks everyone for listening. Share the pod around. Give us a shout on @PNLP on Twitter. No one calls it X. We call it Twitter. That's what it'll always be. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.